Hello! Welcome back to the Long Distance Love Bombs podcast. I am your host, Dr. Jeremy Goldberg, and today's guest is Julie Christensen. I just had a wide-ranging discussion with this woman, and it's so fun and so good. She is dynamic. She is brilliant. She expressed things about topics in ways I've never heard before. Julie is a psychotherapist. She has a practice. She works with lots of clients. She's also previously been a professor of clinical, forensic psychology. She's been a corporate trainer, a public speaker. She's been a newspaper editor, a journalist, but she's also written a bunch of books too, about the topics of anger specifically. And in this conversation, we dive into anger. We talk about how to express anger healthily. We talk about what to do in partnership with somebody that has a temper. We talk about how to deal with children, how to be a good parent, how to help your children learn to feel their emotions and sensations, even if you don't like them in the moment. It's really good. She talks about this three-step framework to help you individually cultivate an awareness of what's going on in your body so that you can choose the most productive and healthy action moving forward. And it's all about anger. It's so good. This is a really good conversation. And I know that I say that every episode, but I mean it. I really mean it. This is great. And you're going to love Julie. I encourage you to check her out on the internet. She's on various social media accounts. And yeah, dive in. And if you're new here, check out the old episodes. There's more than 100 therapists, coaches, authors, musicians, people that you recognize from Instagram. Go back and have a look at the various topics because you're different now than you used to be. Maybe one will resonate. Thank you for being here. Thanks for the 5-star reviews. And without further ado, Julie Christensen. Okay. I've pushed the button. I've done the thing. And you suggested that you want me to try to describe you first. Yeah. And so first I would say, Julie Christensen, welcome to the podcast. And for those listening, Julie has written a bunch of books. She used to be a professor of forensic psychology. She was a mental health worker. She is an expert in conflict and anger management. You're a psychotherapist who has a practice and helps people deal with all kinds of stuff. I believe you're Canadian.
I am.
You're a grandma.
I am.
You seem to be great. What have I missed? What do they need to know about you?
Well, I think you did a pretty darn good job right there, Jeremy. Okay, what did you miss? I don't know. Yeah, I have written a lot of books. I was a professor of psychology and forensic psychology and a variety of other topics for about 7 years. And I left that job when my practice got so busy that I couldn't balance the commuting to Toronto and working several days a week with the amount of demand for my patients. So I am a registered psychotherapist in private practice here in the lovely Niagara region of Canada. So we're about, 10, 15 minutes drive from Niagara Falls. So it's a lovely, lovely area to live in. And we're kind of like the Florida of the North. So it's winter here, but it's not that cold. It's manageable. What else can I tell you about myself? Yeah, my passion is really about helping people to create radical, positive, lasting change, however that looks like, however that needs to happen. I'm there for it. So, you know, if it's people who are struggling with anger and relationship issues or bullying or conflict at work, toxic workplaces, I am there for those individuals who are struggling, but I'm also there for the corporations to help them create change at a more grassroots level. I also, I'm an indie publisher, an indie writer, and I have a very small publishing house and have just started taking on new authors. And so people who really have a story to tell and are struggling with getting that story out there, the common thread seems to be people who have been through some really traumatic situations in their lives and want to put that story on paper. They're using writing as a tool to make sense of it. And again, that just falls right into my wheelhouse in terms of helping people to heal and to create that kind of change, but also just the technical aspects of getting published. So I coach people through those sorts of things, started that up during COVID and seems to be popular. So I'm doing that. And then of course, working with clients in my practice, we cover anger, chronic pain, trauma. I work a lot with first responders and people who've been through traumatic accidents, workplace injuries, that sort of thing. And yeah, so very, very busy life, lots going on.
Jeez, I feel like you could have a podcast just talking about who you are and what you do every day.
I feel like this but could be. When would I do it?
I feel like even our conversation could be 5 different episodes.
Probably.
But, maybe as a starting point, I do want to focus on anger simply because you're an expert on it. And on the podcast so far, we haven't had an episode specifically about anger and how to deal with anger. So I'm excited about that because it's a thing, as I described before we started recording. I'm like, anger is like a big deal and we're not really taught how to deal with it. So, hey, Julie, can you change the world for me? But so you have a lot of clients who deal with a lot of anger issues. Like, what are the most common things that you hear? Like, what do you, you know, what are the common threads or themes that arrive in your office?
I think the common thread, one of the common threads is that for men, anger shows up as aggression. For women, anger shows up as anxiety. And so often when women come into my practice and they say, well, I'm going through all of these things and I'm really anxious, I immediately pull out all of my anger assessments and I hand them over and I say, fill these out for me, please, because I have a feeling that you're not actually anxious. What you're feeling is anger and you don't know how to express that. And so the anxiety is kind of a secondary experience. Whereas for men, often men tend to externalize their emotions much more. Not always. A lot of times when men come to me with depression, I will also hand them the anger assessments and say, what's really going on? Because you may have some people in your life that you love too much to express your anger to because you're afraid it's going to be hurtful. And so you're holding that in and those emotions are going to eat away at your insides and then you're going to respond in this way. So those are two of the common things that I see a lot. And I guess the other thing that I suppose what I hear from people who don't really understand anger and anger resolution is they'll say like, aren't you afraid? Aren't you afraid to work with angry patients? I'm like, no. Why would I be? Am I afraid to work with people who have anxiety issues, you know, and the underlying emotion there is fear? Or am I afraid to work with people who have depression, where the underlying emotion is sadness? It's just amplified. And when people have anger issues, anger is an emotion too. So why would I be scared of that? Right? Like it's nothing to be afraid of. They're not lashing out at me. They're coming to me to show them how to do something different. So I don't consider myself to be really at risk in those cases.
Yeah. And even just noticing the projection in the question, right? Of I would be scared to do your job. So like, aren't you scared to do your job? Like, aren't you scared of anger? Like I'm scared of anger. So, yeah. I mean, why do you think people are scared of anger?
I don't know, man. I mean, you know, like that's a question I've been struggling with for a long time. Like I told you I was bringing my book for a prop. So this is my book, Anger Solutions. I have one of those, you know, one of those dealios that you take to trade shows, the banners that you can pop up. Mm-hmm. And my old one was basically this blown up, you know? And so people would be at trade shows and they'd walk around and they'd see my banner and they'd be like, oh, wow, that's, you know, that's a really nice bold color. It looks attractive, whatever. And they'd come over. And then as soon as they'd see the word anger, they would back up 2 steps. And I would stand there and I think, okay, so what's that about? Like, are you afraid that it's contagious? Are you afraid that somehow the word is going to taint you somehow if you get too close to it, you know? And then they would always start out the conversation by saying, I know someone who fill in the blanks. And because I'm a cheeky little bugger, I would look back and I would say, yeah, it's probably you. Right?
Yeah. Like, my friend John has an anger problem.
Exactly. Asking for a friend. Yeah. So I'm not sure what it is, but I think that the primary cause of people's misunderstanding of the emotion is that they don't see it as an emotion at all. I mean, I'm thinking of what we were talking about before we started, when you said, you know, when we were talking about clean or healthy anger, and you mentioned three words, you said rage, aggression, and manipulation. Only one of those is an emotion. The other two are behaviors. And when people conceptualize anger as a behavior, that's when it becomes a problem, because no one ever thinks of anger as me coming to you assertively and saying, hey, Jeremy, we had this conversation the other day and you said something and it really rubbed me the wrong way and it's been bugging me for days. I'm kind of mad about it and I'd like to talk to you about it. No one thinks of that as anger, right? They think of me slapping you in the face and saying, how could you? How dare you? That's anger. We all recognize that. So they're identifying anger as behavior when they should be identifying it as emotion. Right. And so I have this little deal that I do, Anger Myths and Realities. You probably find that it's probably still on my YouTube channel somewhere. But I go through the myths. And the first myth is that anger is a behavior. So if anger is something that you do, then the second myth follows very easily, which means that anger is bad. Right. So if it's something you do, it must be bad. It's okay for us to judge it because that's what we do, right? Human beings, we judge bad behavior. And if it's bad, then you should never express it. You should never do anger. So all of these things come down the line. So, you know, if that's the belief system that people have, that anger is something that you do, then all of the other beliefs fall into line. And now you have this misconceptualization of something that is really just inherent to human nature. Everyone feels anger. Right? It's as natural as feeling happy or sad or scared or disgusted. You know, if someone shows me a plate of worms and says, this is your dinner, I'm going to be grossed out and you're going to know because it's going to, right? It's going to show on my face. Likewise, if someone brings me a filet mignon dinner and a bottle of really fancy champagne and sets it down in front of me, and just as I'm about to dig in, they swipe all that food off the table and it all goes smashing down on the floor, I might be angry about that. And you're going to see that on my face too, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why should we judge the angry face but not judge the disgusted face? It doesn't seem right. It's just an emotion like everything else.
Julie, you're very good at this game of describing anger. I'm already like, oh shit, like misunderstanding emotion for behavior. Just that little tidbit like was a puzzle piece of sorts for me. It's like, oh, it's that. Why do we do that?
Well, think about this. Think about how we interact with our kids, right? When kids do something that is really, really, you know, unacceptable, and I want to say it's bad or it's wrong, but if they do something that's unacceptable by grown-up standards, like, I don't know, throwing, I have twin boys, they're 26 years old, but back in the day, they did some pretty wild stuff. And, you know, so like, okay, so you just threw your brother down the stairs. That's not cool. Not socially acceptable, right? Yeah. But they were angry. You know, when my little guys were sort of in that terrible 2, 3.5, 4 stage, they would punch me. And I would say to them, hey, you know what? It is okay for you to be mad, but it is not okay for you to hit me, because I knew that someday they were going to be 6'4" like their dad. And that punch was going to hurt, right? If I don't teach them not to do it now, they're going to continue to do it because they'll think it's okay. So way back then, I wanted them to understand that your anger is okay. And what we typically do with children who are really concrete thinkers is when they react with anger, we tell them to stop it. Right? Stop that right now. You know, like stop it. And so what they hear is stop feeling that way. They don't hear stop doing that thing. They equate the two together because they don't have abstract thought yet. They don't know how to separate their emotions from their behaviors. So being conscious of that, I always told my boys in particular, how you feel is how you feel, right? Go over to the couch, take one of the cushions, punch the snot out of the cushion. I don't care, right? You can beat up the cushion. And then when you're done, you've got your energy out, come back and sit on my knee and then tell me what's going on. And they would, they'd come over to my, you know, sit on my lap. And one of them would say, well, I don't like you. And I'd say, that's okay. I don't like you either. Right? It's the truth. I don't like you right now. You're being a little bit of a jerk, but I still love you. Right? Like, it's okay for me not to like what you're doing, but I can still love you despite the fact that you're doing something I disapprove of. So just having those conversations in ways that makes the distinction between how you're feeling and what you're doing is really important. And when we can instill that from an early age, it makes the whole issue of anger management or anger resolution that much easier to deal with, because I understand that I'm feeling how I'm feeling and it's okay for me to feel this way. My feelings are appropriate, but I get to choose what behavior I'm going to use to express that emotion to the world or to the people who can help me solve the problem.
Mm. It's so good when you say it like that. It makes such sense. So you alluded to this idea of punching a pillow as a way to express, like, move the energy is the way that I'm kind of visualizing it. Like, there's a lot of, there's a lot going on inside that, like, angry, I feel like is a, like a hot emotion. There's a lot, yes, of movement. There's like this internal pressure building. And if you don't sort of release that pressure, it just builds and builds and builds. And what I've seen and experienced firsthand is that something very trivial will happen, and then all of that pressure will explode. Yes. And then that kind of manifests as rage, aggression, lashing out, passive aggressiveness, et cetera. So do you have any other kind of suggestions for how people can move this anger through them in a healthy manner?
Sure. So what I typically encourage people to do is to, it's like it's an advanced decision-making model. So I really believe that thoughts inform feelings, feelings inform choices and actions, actions dictate outcomes. So you have to start with what you're thinking about whatever the trigger is. So, you know, if we think about this in really simple terms, anger occurs when your expectations are not being met. Okay, so if I purchase a new computer from Best Buy and they tell me it's, you know, it's plug and play, everything is set up, I get it home, there's no operating system on it, there are no apps, there's nothing on it. It's just a blue screen, the blue screen of death, right? I might be upset about that. And if I go back to Best Buy and they make me stand in line for 3 hours in order to get customer service, now my expectations are really, really unmet. Okay. So as my expectations for the right product with the right items on it, timely customer service, courteous customer service, whatever my expectations are, when those expectations are not met, the more dissatisfied I am, the more angry I'll be. And so when I get to the point where my threshold for disappointment has reached its, you know, when I've gotten there, I'm going to do something. Now the question is, what will I do? Right? So the way that I encourage people to work through this is a system I call TSA, think, say, then ask. So all of the hard work is done in the thinking stage. So you have to ask yourself the question, what is happening right now? And take your emotions out of it and just think about the situation. The situation is, I paid, I don't know, $1,000 for a new laptop that was supposed to come fully loaded. I got it home. I plugged it in. It is not loaded at all. It's an empty taco shell. So that, you know, I didn't get what I wanted. That's what's happening. What does this mean? That's the second question. What does this mean to me? And this is where we get hung up because we're so entitled and so selfish, right? I might say they did it on purpose. I might interpret it as a racist issue, which it obviously wouldn't be, but you know, people get all sorts of ideas in their head depending on where they're at in the moment. I might say, well, they didn't give me all the software because I'm Black. Stupid, but I might believe that. I might say, you know, they're just irresponsible. And all of these, if you'll notice, are judgment statements, right? So I am applying judgment to a situation that I really know nothing about. But whatever meaning I assign to this event will determine how upset I am about it, right? So if
I feel like that should be bolded and underlined.
For real. Like,
whatever meaning I say it again. Whatever meaning
you assign to the event will determine how you feel about it. So if I say, it's not a big deal, I'll just go back and have them load up all the software. Now I'm not mad, right? Immediately, like the anger just goes away. If I just go, well, this doesn't mean anything. You know, it's kind of like if you're walking through the grocery store and you've got an empty cart and someone sees the cart over there while you're over here and they take your cart and they walk away with it. That's not a big deal. There was nothing in it, right? It's just a minor inconvenience for you to go and get a new cart. But if that cart has your child in it, do you see what I mean? Right? It changes everything. Oh, where do you think you're going? Right? Like now my mama bear claws are coming out and you better just walk away before I beat you down in the middle of the grocery store, right? Like, because you're not taking my child. But if it's an empty shopping cart, why would I get upset about that? It's not, it has no meaning.
Because it's mine. I've been that guy. I've been like, that's mine. What are you doing? It's obviously mine. It doesn't have my name on it. You didn't know that it was mine. Like, yeah. You didn't see me with it, but it's mine. Why are you taking what's mine?
Right? Exactly. Again, your expectation is that no one should touch it because it belongs to you.
Right.
And when that expectation isn't met, see how that works? So question number one, what's happening? Question number two, what does it mean? Question number three, how do I feel about it? Question number four, what is my desired outcome? How would I like this to turn out? And then question number five, what can I do to achieve my desired outcome? Okay. And then once you start running through the possibilities, because there are lots of possibilities, right? But then you also have to ask, what's the best thing that can happen if I do that? What's the worst thing that can happen if I do that? Right? Because if someone steals my empty cart and then I, you know, do a running tackle and take them down to the floor and start pummeling their face in the middle of the grocery shop,
what's about it.
The best thing that could happen? Right. I know what the worst thing is, but what's the, okay. So I get a little satisfaction. That's the best thing that can happen. That, you know, I'll feel that satisfaction for about 30 seconds before security hauls me off of the person who stole my cart, put me in cuffs, put me in a little room and make me wait for police. Right. Like nothing good can come from that. So we'll eliminate naturally a lot of the options when we are focused on the outcome that we really, really want. So if my desired outcome is to get the stuff loaded onto my computer, I'm probably not going to go into Best Buy and cause the scene, because I know that the angrier I am and the more abusive I am to their staff, the less likely they'll want to help me. So I'm probably better off saying, you know, I'm really disappointed. I was excited to get home and use my computer, and I got there and there was nothing but the blue screen of death. I don't know what happened, but I wonder if you guys could just load this up for me. If I'm nice, I can still express that I'm disappointed in the service, but I'll get better service, right? I'll give you one real life example. Where I used to work, where my old office was located, there was a McDonald's close by. So, I was craving a quarter pounder with cheese. So off I went to the drive-thru And I ordered my quarter pounder with cheese, and they handed me my sandwich through the window. And of course, you have to drive off because there's other people. And I was like, this bag doesn't feel like there's a quarter pound of meat in here. You know, it's pretty light. So I pulled into the parking lot and I opened it up, and there was a piece of cheese, a slice of tomato, and some lettuce in my sandwich, but there was no beef. So I actually thought it was pretty funny. I didn't assign any other meaning than that. It was just ridiculous that you'd order a quarter pound of meat and there's, you know, the sandwich weighs like 2 ounces. So I just parked my car. I went in and I stood in line. I waited my turn. And I got up to the front, and it was just a kid. And I know she didn't get the reference, but I couldn't help myself because, you know, we're old and we're uninhibited. So I said to her, I know this isn't your fault, but I just got to ask you, where's the beef? And I opened up the sandwich and she was just like, oh my God, you know? And so she rushed and she got me a new sandwich. And after it was all done, she said, you know, you were so nice about that. And I said, well, why should I be snarky? It's a sandwich, you know, like it doesn't mean anything. I didn't even really need to eat the thing. You know, who needs to eat McDonald's, honestly? But, and no, you know, no slight on McDonald's, but like trying to watch my weight over here.
You know, so. It's a sign from the universe. It's like, you don't need that quarter pounder.
Yeah, did I really need to eat that sandwich right now? So it's like, it's not a big deal, right? It's a minor inconvenience. There is absolutely no reason for me to go in there and shout the house down and make this poor girl feel horrible when she wasn't even working the drive-thru in the first place. Right? It's not her fault. So when you think it through and you say, okay, what's my desired outcome? Well, my desired outcome is to eat a quarter pounder with cheese. So how about I just go in there and ask them nicely if they could make me one, right? Instead of me getting all angry and then them having to kick me out of the store and me not getting my sandwich, right? So it's that thinking it through part is really important. What's happening? What does it mean? How do I feel? What do I want? How do I get that? What's the best thing that'll happen? What's the worst thing that'll happen if I try any of these strategies? And then I'll choose the strategy that is most likely to get me to my outcome without any blowback. That's the trick.
And then that's the whole TSA framework
there? That's just the T.
Oh, shit. Okay. All right.
Once you figured that out, that's when you go. So, you know, if I go back to the quarter pounder and cheese analogy, once I decided I was just going to be nice, I thought it was funny. So I'm just going to go in there. I'm going to crack some jokes. I'm going to ask them to make me a new sandwich. Then I went in and I spoke to the person at the counter, the person who can help me solve the problem. That's who I go to, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of going on social media and being like, can you believe these people didn't put a meat in my sandwich, right? I just go to the person who can help me solve the problem, ask them if they can help me. They help me. And then we're done. Right? TSA. This is the problem. Can you help me? That part's easy. Once you've thought it through and you figured out what's the best way to go about resolving, that's why I call this anger solutions. I don't call it anger management because it's about problem resolution. Problems make you angry. So if you solve the problem, the anger will resolve itself. Just basically the crux of everything that I do.
I love all of that. And I have a question because I feel like we've overlooked a very important part of this process, which is you've demonstrated the awareness to pause and collect yourself before throwing the sandwich in this poor child's face, before immediately grabbing your phone and launching a Twitter tirade that you might regret later, right? So any words of wisdom around cultivating, like I refer to it oftentimes as a crossroads. It's like you have to recognize more crossroad points, like little forks in the road where it's like, mm-hmm. I can go that way or I can go that way. How do you teach that? What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, so how do we teach that? We teach that literally by just, when I'm teaching anger solutions, either in an individual counseling setting or as a group, we take everything in little baby steps. So we don't talk about, you know, that conversation that you and I had about how anger happens because your expectations aren't being met. we don't talk about that until the third lesson.
Right. Okay, that's the advanced stuff.
The first two lessons are really all about that awareness building that you were talking about. So in that first lesson, we just talk about emotions and nothing else, right? How do you access your feelings? How do you name them? What are some of the words that you use right now to express your feelings? And let's look at all of the other feelings that you know you have, but you don't have names for them, right? We talk about the importance of assigning the proper label to what you're feeling so that you don't minimize your experience or over amplify it, right? If you're just a little bit annoyed, but you use the word livid, your body, your physiology is going to respond to the word livid and you're going to be livid. So if you're only annoyed, stick to annoyed. Okay. Like don't try and make it more than it is because you literally will. So we spend the first session all on that. The second lesson is all about how do you express your anger? What's your anger style? So we talk about the bottler. You talked about what we call the controlled blaster, the one who holds onto it and holds onto it until they just can't anymore. We talk about the scrapper who just wants to fight and take their anger out on everything, and the acne poster boy or poster girl who just blows up really quickly and then doesn't even realize that they've had an explosion. So there are all these different styles of anger expression. Which one are you, right? Like if can you develop that self-awareness so that you know this is what I'm doing right now and I have an understanding of why I use this style, but I also now understand why it's not working for me, why it's creating problems for me. So we spend the first two sessions just on those things. And only then do we start talking about how anger develops and your frustration signals and what happens when your expectations aren't being met, all those sorts of things. And then we start looking at tools. So we don't teach TSA until the very end of lesson three. And then we break it down. So this is how you process your thoughts. This is how you use assertive language to talk to people, to tell them how you feel and what you need and how they can help you solve the problem. And here's how you ask for help. These are the kinds of questions you should ask. You don't want to ask questions like, did someone drop you on your head when you were a child? Is that why you behave like this, right? That's not the question you want to ask. You want to ask questions like, how can we work together so that this problem doesn't occur again, right? What can we do differently next time? We want questions that engage the other party to help with the problem solving. And then we teach listening skills. And then we talk about forgiveness and we break everything down in baby steps so that people really build the self-awareness, but they also build the skill.
Can we expand on that a little bit? So one of the things I wanted to talk about was expressing anger in relationship or with another person in a conversation, right? And you've started there with a few questions that you can ask. Do you have examples of like sentence stems like when you did X, it made me feel Y. Like I'm looking for like a little cheat sheet, right?
Yeah.
If somebody wants to start getting better at this stuff, like a script or.
For sure. One of the things I say, and I'm not picking on you, Jeremy, I swear to God, I'm not.
Well, here we go. What? Now I'm feeling angry. No, I'm just kidding.
You know, when you do X, it made me feel Y. Yeah. And so one of the things we teach in our program is to stop saying that makes me feel this way.
Yeah.
Because every time we say that makes me feel or that makes me do whatever, what we're really doing is we are abdicating the power that we have over our own actions and our own responses to someone else, right? He makes me so mad. So what you're really saying is all he has to do is push your buttons in a certain way and you're gonna, right? You're like a marionette on a string. So if you change that language, to take back that ownership, to say, I feel this way because that's a really good place to start. So, you know, I'm feeling really frustrated because I was expecting there to be software on my computer and there is none. Instead of saying, you guys make me so mad, right? As soon as I say that, they're going to go, oh no, because they don't want ownership for your feelings.
And right? It's an accusation as well, right? It's
What's like that?
It's an accusation as well.
Yes.
You did something wrong. You did something bad to me.
Yes.
And so it sets the dynamic as victim and whatever, murderer.
Exactly.
Bad doer.
So it creates that sense of defensiveness, because if people are saying to me, you made me feel like this, I'm like, oh, hang on a second. I don't take responsibility for your emotions, right? Like, I don't. Your emotions are your emotions. They're yours. You have to decide to own that. So being able to say, this is how I feel. This is why. This is what I need. This is my idea of how this can be better, but I'd like to engage you in the process. Are you willing to work with me? So one of the questions that I often encourage people to ask when they need to start that conversation, or maybe it's more of a statement, is to say, hey, Jeremy, can I talk to you for a second? I have a problem and I need your help. Now, when I approach you that way, how do you feel when you hear me say that?
I'm like, oh, how may I be of assistance, Julie? I'm honored.
Right? So if I came to you and said, you are my problem.
I don't feel as honored.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's all in the approach, right? Because remember, anger occurs when your expectations are not being met. They occur when you have a problem that a solution doesn't readily present itself for. So if I solve this problem, my feelings will resolve themselves. So why don't I go to Jeremy? Because Jeremy is part of the challenge. Why don't I go to him and say, this is a problem for me. I need your help to solve this problem. Are you willing to work with me? Can we sort this out? And this is why I teach the assertiveness skills and the listening skills, because a lot of people think that all they're responsible to do is to say, you did this thing. It made me really upset. You make me so angry. There, I've expressed my feelings. And then they run away before they, you know, before you have a chance to say anything back. Well, that's not anger resolution. I can't even say that that's anger management.
Yes.
That's just you taking an opportunity to beat somebody over the head and make them feel guilty and then walking away, right? Nothing gets resolved. The problem will still exist because they don't, if they knew how to make it better, they would have done it already.
Yeah. It's like, that wasn't a discussion. That was an assault. You just dumped a bunch of stuff on them and fled.
Yes. Right. Yeah. So, you know, I think, you know, that's one of the reasons why I've been married for 35 years, because my husband and I both, we realized that, you know, even though we know each other really well, I still shouldn't try to read his mind. Because I don't really know what he's thinking until he tells me what he's thinking. Likewise, you know, so every once in a while we'll get into an argument, and it's not really an argument. It's more of a, you know, a heated debate about whatever's going on in current times, whatever. And he'll say, I know what you're going to say. And I'm like, no, I don't think you do. Right. I'm pretty sure you don't know what I'm going to say because it hasn't come out of my mouth yet. And then he'll catch himself and say, okay. All right. You know, I'll back up and you can say what you want to say. And then when I've said it, he says, oh, you know what? You're right. I wasn't expecting you to say that. So we've just learned that we need to keep those channels of communication open all the time. That doesn't mean that our relationship is perfect by no stretch. We have this running joke that, you know, the reason that we're able to stay married is because I sometimes hate him and he sometimes hates me. We just don't hate each other on the same day.
I like that. Yeah.
So like there are times when we just don't get along, but for the most part, we're pretty good. And I think that comes down to putting into practice the things that we've learned over the years in terms of how we communicate with each other. You know, I understand that my husband's personality style and his temperament is very different from mine. He's an introvert, a very strong introvert. And if you think of personality dimensions, he is green. He's green gold. If you look at me in personality dimensions colors, I am blue orange. So we're just two separate parts of the spectrum, but somehow we work together. But I know for him, he needs time to think things through. So what I used to do when we were much younger is I would say, we've got to solve this right now. I need you to talk to me. Why can't we just sort this out? You know, and I'm haranguing him and he's curling into himself because he needs time and space to process what I've just shared with him about why I'm upset. And so now when I'm feeling upset with him, I don't go to him about it at all. Not face to face. I write him a letter and I say, hey, and that gives me an opportunity to really process my thoughts and pull out all the mean, hurtful, snarky things that I just want to say in the moment. You know, it gives me a time to process, how am I really feeling? And what's the real issue? Because if I'm not addressing the problem, this letter has no point, right? I want to solve the problem that caused the upset. So let me just focus on the problem. So writing him a letter gives me the opportunity to do that. I leave it with him. I give him a couple of days. And when he's ready to talk about it, he lets me know. And then we'll sit down and we'll hash it out and we'll talk it through. Right now, he knows that he can come to me immediately when he's upset because that's the way my personality works.
Yeah, you're just like, all right, man, let's go.
Let's do it, right? Let's just talk it out. But for him, he needs the time and the space. So I respect him enough and I respect our relationship enough to understand that I need to adjust to his communication style if I want to be heard, right? If I just want satisfaction in the moment, then I'll just do whatever I want. But it won't provide the long-term outcomes that I'm going for. You know, a lot of times people have asked me to contribute to things or to participate in programs or to do whatever, you know, or to show up at an event, you know, the night before Valentine's Day or something. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. And the reason I'm not going to do that is because I would like to stay married. Right? My desired outcome is very clear in my head. I want to stay married. I'm not going to do things to make my husband feel like I don't value our relationship. Right? Mm-hmm. So if the ask is going to put me in a place where he feels like he's not as important to me as he should be, I'm not going to do that. Right? So it all comes back to that TSA, right? I think things through, and it is a practice. It's not something that comes naturally. It's something that you have to really be intentional and very conscious about. A lot of my clients will put the whole, you know, the list of questions, and they'll stick them up on the wall in front of their computer or something so that they have it there all the time. So every time the phone rings and there's somebody else, you know, presenting a problem to them, they'll be like, okay, hang on a second, let's think this through, right? And they walk them through it. It's beautiful to see my clients walking their clients through this process so that they can get their problem solved. That's the whole point.
The ripple effects of your work.
Yeah.
I have a question for someone who is in partnership with an individual who has anger management issues, let's call them, or somebody who has a temper, somebody that is a scrapper or that has outbursts, and they know like that this is happening and they know that this is a thing that is now turned into a pattern. And so they're like, I can't just go to my partner and bring this up because I know what's going to happen. So I've stopped doing it. Right. And so I feel like in some level they would need to be the one expressing the anger while also holding the space for the partner's emotions at the same time. Kind of. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I have a couple of ways that I would suggest. And again, this is really dependent on people's personality, right? Because I realize that my sense of humor is a little warpy and it doesn't work for everybody, you know? So if, you know, if my husband decides that he's going to go off on a tangent or something, a lot of times I'll just let him rant. And I think regardless of your personality style, that's probably the best thing to do. Because when you interrupt someone, when they're in the middle of that flow, it actually agitates them further, right? So it's better to just let them go, let them say what needs to be said. And every once in a while, when he's done, I'll just say, are you done? Are you finished? Can we go back to like being a normal couple now, right? Like, are you done with it, with that? And that's me. I mean, some other people might do that and it would not go well, right? So I think you have to know your boundaries within the relationship that you're in. I think that humor is a terrific way to just sort of break that tension and open up a space for a discussion about what's really bugging you, right? I think the other thing that is really helpful is to remember this, and I'm trying to frame it in my head so that I don't come out sounding like an idiot. It's like this. You can't change that angry person, right? You can't change him or her, whoever your partner is. You can't change your partner. You can't change the way that they communicate. So you have two choices. You can change yourself, or you can change your expectations. Okay, those are your two options. So in my practice, I teach a lot the notion of radical acceptance. And the beauty of radical acceptance is that when my husband is pitching a fit about whatever, right? Whatever he decides to pitch a fit about. And that makes me feel anxious, right? He knows this. We've had this discussion many times. When he's venting, I start to feel anxious because I don't like that sort of elevated tone. I don't like to see people so frustrated that they have to express their anger in that way. It makes me uncomfortable. So when I start to feel anxious, I realize that that's me, not him, right? And I can't say to him, could you please stop complaining so I won't feel anxious? Because that's selfish, right? It's selfish. And it would just make him feel more angry, because now what I'm really saying is that my feelings are more important than your feelings. I don't care about yours. I just need you to stop so that I can feel good. That's not okay. So what I do then is I think to myself, Steve's having a bad day, and that's okay. Right? In this moment, he needs to rant, and that's okay. I'm going to accept his need to rant, and I'm going to be okay with it. Because what happens, again, coming back to expectations, is that if I start thinking, oh, I wish he would just stop. Oh, look, he's not stopping. Two more seconds go by. Oh, God, he's still going, you know, and I wished he would stop like 3 seconds ago. Now I'm getting more and more anxious and agitated. Right? But if I just accept it in the moment, this is how he feels in the moment, and this is what he needs to do to express that emotion, and I can be accepting of that, I no longer feel anxious. I can let that go because my expectations of him are equal to what I'm seeing in him, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not being disappointed in the moment. I'm just accepting that this is who he is and this is what he needs to do. I've been married to him for 33 years. Plus the three that we dated before that. So I've known this guy for a long time. I know this is what he needs to do. Why am I sitting here wishing he would do something different? Right. So I think that's part of it. But now because I've accepted that he needs to do that and I'm giving him the space to vent, he's going to de-escalate much more quickly. And then when he's done, if he still feels the need to talk about it, we can talk about it and we can do that rationally. If I start yelling at him and saying, you know, you're always yelling, you're always angry, I wish you could just stop it. And I don't know why you have to make such a big deal out of it. Now we're fighting. And what are we fighting about? We're not fighting about the problem, we're not even fighting about how to solve the problem. We're fighting about the fact that he responds to the problem in a certain way and I don't like it. And if you really think about how arguments go in relationships, a lot of them go like that, right? Something happens with the money. I'm stressed about the money. So I start venting because I just saw the grocery bill and you spent $75 more than we said that we were going to spend. And then instead of saying, yeah, but food prices have gone up and there's not much we can do about that. And I had to buy stuff in bulk because you never know when they're going to have another run on toilet paper, right? Like instead of having a discussion about it, then the person who spent the extra $75 says, oh my God, I can't believe you're yelling at me about this, right? And then it escalates from there. But if you just check yourself and just say, you know what? This person has a right to feel how they feel. They do, right? Anger is okay. It's okay for you to be angry. But we can't have a conversation about how you're responding until you calm down. So I'm going to give you the space to vent. When you calm down, then I can say to my partner, my spouse, my kids, whoever, you know what? I totally get why you're so upset. It really hurts me when you talk to me that way. Right. And then we can talk about how we're communicating, and then we can talk about the problem itself without having another fight. I think it really all comes down to that self-awareness, that willingness to change your response, because you can't change the other person. You know, a lot of people have come to me and said, how do I get my partner to stop being verbally abusive? And I'm like, you can't. You can't stop someone from doing whatever. You can ask them to stop. But at the end of the day, the choice is theirs. You can't make them do anything, right? People change when they're ready to change, but they'll be more willing to change if they see that you're open to giving them the space and not trying to pressure them into doing so. If they love you enough and they want the relationship to work, if their desired outcome is also to stay married, right? Then they will respond in kind to the way that your expectations have shifted and your responses have shifted.
Yeah. What came up for me there was like, you can have your own dialogue in your head while those things are happening too. And you mentioned humor previously. I had this thought of like, wow, he's really going to set a world record today for complaining. Like, I'm so proud of him. Like, you could be telling yourself that and having a straight face and being listening, right? Whatever sort of self-soothes you. And I was also reminded the other day, my partner, who's a very intense woman at times, was feeling very intensely. And she came over and I have this line in a poem I wrote years ago, which is like, a strong scream is no match for a silent stare, which I feel like—
That's good.
Thanks. Like, but for anger, like, you don't need to screaming and ranting and raving. Occasionally, just a cold blooded assassin stare is like, oh, they're angry. Like, I get that, right? And so,
yeah,
I think I forget exactly what happened, but I said something like, "Are you doing all right? Like, do I need to take a rocket to the moon for a couple days?" Like, I was joking, and she just stared at me and was like, I want to put the whole world on a rocket ship to Mars. And I was like, okay, cool. And like, but in my brain, I was like, this isn't about you. Don't take this seriously.
Yeah.
But another thing that we do that I think is really helpful for someone listening is like, we've identified certain phrases that provide safety prior to the conversation or the anger being expressed. So for example, I love you. I'm not going anywhere. We're good. I'm going to have to talk about a couple things right now because I'm feeling all the feels, right? Mm-hmm. So I love what you said there. So thank you for that. We've touched on children. We've touched on self-soothing through your TSA process. We touched on relationships, holding space, expression. Is there anything that's that I've overlooked that you're like, Jeremy, how can we do a whole conversation and not talk about my secret razzle dazzle maneuver?
I don't know. You know, I mean, I literally can talk about anger for like 8 hours without stopping. So I could talk about this stuff all day long. And
I have a question actually. How did you get into anger specifically? Like, what happened in your past where you're like, this is my thing?
Yeah. That's a good question. I honestly, I can't pinpoint any specific thing. I do know, you know, I grew up in a Jamaican household where corporal punishment was acceptable. And sometimes we received corporal punishment because we were bratty, disobedient little children. And sometimes we received corporal punishment because my parents were angry.
Just to clarify, corporal punishment being spanking?
Spankings, yes. And so spanking with a hand, spanking with a belt, spanking with whatever was handy. I won't call it abuse because in the culture, you know, within the cultural norms of the country that I grew up in, That's not abuse. That is keeping a firm hand on your kids. Spare the rod, spoil the child, and all of that, right? I got spanked every day at school, whether I was disobedient or not, because they wanted to make sure that they didn't miss anything while we were out at recess. So every day, every day before we would go back into class after recess, we would all line up and we would all get one lash across the bottom before going back into our school. That's your British education system. Okay.
Even if you did nothing wrong.
We did nothing wrong. They wanted to make sure that, you know, just in case we did something and we didn't get caught, we still got punished for it.
So isn't that then incentivizing bad behavior because you know you're going to get punished? So why not go and steal something?
That's a discussion for another
day. Okay, that's a different podcast. Sorry.
Honestly, I could spend a whole day on that, just on that.
Okay, so you grew up...
That was the culture.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I always knew when I was getting a beating because I deserved it. And I knew when I was getting a beating because my dad was frustrated. I could tell the difference, even as a child. When I got into working in mental health, I was still fairly fascinated by it, but we had some issues in the house that I was working in. It was a residential program for people with severe mental health issues, and things happened. And it was evident that we needed to address the anger that was building in the home. And there were no tools. And so I took it upon myself to do research and I was hooked. You know, once I started reading, it was like, oh my, you know, I'm an angry person. I didn't realize I was an angry person until I started doing this research. I thought, I'm 20 years old. I thought I had it all together. And I realized that I really didn't. So I used the material that I learned and I was pulling together, of course, to address my own issues, because I'm sort of like that kitchen tester. You know, I won't share a recipe with you unless I've tried it myself. It just became a passion for me. And next thing I know, you know, 30 years later, here I am still doing the work. So,
yeah, I love that. I love that a lot. So final question, I suppose, and I did warn you that I might ask you about this.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
So just for those listening, I'm not springing this on her. But you, you're an anger expert and you're also a Black woman. And I know that there is this kind of stereotype in the culture around angry Black women, or, oh, that's just an angry Black woman. And I feel I would be remiss of the opportunity to just ask, like, any thoughts, anything you want to say to that, anything culturally, basically, like, Julie, it's your podcast, like, whatever the heck you want to talk about, it's fine.
Well, I do want to say thank you for asking the question. And I mean that sincerely, because I think that, you know, if we look at the hierarchy, you know, if we look at the food chain, you know, of the human species, Black women and Indigenous women are very close to the bottom of that chain. And I really feel like that notion of the angry Black woman is a way to minimize not only Black women's experience, but it's also a way to minimize their potential. Because if I, you know, I'm a business owner, I own two businesses, and I run my own show, right? And I'm happy to do that, because after working out there, both in the corporate world as well as in not-for-profit, I understood very quickly that there was not going to be a lot of opportunity for me to move forward in those agencies. I was never going to get a management position, even though I was overqualified. I was never going to be invited to have a seat at a table unless my contributions would get attributed to someone else. That was the reality of my experience. And so, you know, if I remember writing a policy for an agency when we had the mental health reform in 1994, I spent so much time working on this policy, and the organization took all of the content that I wrote and they were like, thank you so much, this is wonderful. And I never got one lick of credit for it. Not one. you know, I didn't get paid for the time that I spent working on writing this document. There was nothing. And I remember at one point having a supervision session with one of the managers, and she said, you know, instead of saying you're really good at your job, we're so happy to have you here, and you're such, you know, you're such a positive contribution to our team. She turned it around to say, you know, the problem with you is that there's nothing we can teach you. Huh? Right? And if I were to come back at them with a response, I would have been labeled the angry Black woman. Right? Instead of saying, well, you know, her concerns are legitimate, because I don't think you would say that to someone else if they were, you know, Caucasian or, you know, French Canadian or whatever. You wouldn't have used that language with them. So why is it okay? But they won't have that conversation. It's easier, you know, you look at AOC in the States and everyone say, oh, she's just an angry Latina, but she's making sense. Right? Maxine Walters, you look at some of these other people and they say, oh, she's just an angry Black woman. And so when we say that, she's just an angry Black woman, now everybody stops listening. Right? One of the styles, one of the anger styles that I talk about in my book is the windmill. Right? The windmill just is a blowhard. Wendy Weiner, just, you know, constantly complaining. And people get tired of listening to the complaints and they stop listening, right? And the reason that it's easy for them to stop listening is because they have this dialogue that runs in their head that says, eh, we've heard this before. It's no big deal. They just complain all the time. They're not looking for solutions. And it's the same, it's that same mindset that says, angry Black woman, angry Black man. But when you think about it, who is the heart of her community, right? The Black woman is the heart of her community. She is very often raising her children by herself because the systems in place have removed her partner from her home, right? Either because they have to travel, you think of immigrant farm workers that have to travel to an entire new country and work in really horrific conditions just so that they can support their families at home, right? These systems are set up to keep those partners separated. And then we say, oh, well, you know, men aren't taking care of their families. That's not true. You know, these women are so angry. Okay, but they're tired, right? They're working two jobs. They're raising their children. They're trying to keep their kids out of the penal system, trying to make sure that their kids have a better education than they had. And they're trying to get ahead after, you know, doing master's degrees and PhDs and still not being able to get hired, or when they start out in their own business, not getting paid what someone who is not a person of color would get paid to do the same thing. You know, so it's all of those things. So are we any more angry than anyone else? I don't think so. Are we intelligent and powerful and motivated and driven? Yes. And I think it's kind of like a trickle down. So, you know, you think about the glass ceiling for women in general in corporate America or corporate Canada. And it's very hard for women to break through the glass ceiling. It is much more difficult for a Black woman to break through that glass ceiling, because we all know, you know, we've all seen the memes that if a man is angry or aggressive in corporate America, he's considered a leader. If a woman is aggressive, she's considered something that starts with B and ends with H. Right. So there's already that double standard in terms of how you relate, which is why I think Hillary Clinton never had a chance in running for president, because America's not ready for a woman, a strong. And I'm not saying that I believe in her politics. I'm just saying, you know, they weren't ready for a strong, assertive, self-assured woman to take the reins, because it's uncomfortable. Right. It's uncomfortable. We have sown those seeds of stereotypes to make it uncomfortable for women to have power, real power as it's perceived in Western culture. And so when anybody talks about Oprah or Michelle Obama running for president, you know, people are just falling out into apoplexy. Like, we can't do that. Like, we can't possibly have a Black woman in power. Like, that's just, we're talking about the person at the bottom of the food chain, giving her the highest office in the land. That's impossible. They're just not ready for it, because that stereotype is so deeply embedded that every time, you know, if I think of Michelle Obama in the White House, it's an amazing picture, but you take Michelle Obama and you put her up against Vladimir Putin, I guarantee you he would call her an angry Black woman. Guaranteed. Oh, she doesn't understand politics. She's just an angry Black woman. You know, like that's what we would get. And it's just, I think it's just a term now that is used to allow people, or to give people permission to disregard the needs and the opinions and the talents of Black women. That's my, okay, I'm getting off my soapbox now. I'm done. Oh,
please. You're speaking to a fan and a connoisseur of soapboxes, so I appreciate it. I was actually going to feed you another potential soapbox question out of curiosity, which is Kamala Harris is now the vice president.
Yes.
In America.
Yes. So,
thoughts on having a Black woman in a position of power? Like,
I think it's fabulous. I think it's absolutely fabulous. Now, the real question is not what I think about it. You know, I have a lot of clients who, when Barack Obama was voted in, and they said, you know, how do you feel about this? And I said, well, I'm excited that a person of color has made it to that office. The question is not that, you know, it's not that he got voted in, it's whether or not he'll be able to accomplish anything. And what we saw was 8 years of him being stonewalled by the other politicians. Much of that reason was because, it wasn't because of his politics, it was because of his person, you know? So I'm more curious to see who will ally with Kamala Harris and who will try to tear her down, because it's great that she was voted in as the vice president. I am not sure if she's going to have a fun 4 years. I expect that she's going to have a really difficult time, because that old white boys club is going to work really hard at making her feel like she's incompetent and that she's powerless to affect any real change. So I'm saying exactly what I said when Barack Obama got voted in. I'm just going to sit and watch the show and see what happens.
Hopefully Kamala Harris has read the amazing book by Julie Christensen, which highlights that nobody can make you feel anything that you choose not to feel.
And if
you
send her a copy, what do you think?
If you use the TSA framework, you'll understand and you will reclaim your power.
Right. You know, she's pretty bright and she's very incisive. She knows the game. Hmm. Right. So I suspect that she'll be able to hold her own, but I do think it's going to take a toll emotionally on her, you know, particularly if Joe Biden doesn't make it through his first 4 years.
Yeah. I think, right, regardless of politics, regardless of how you vote, I think it is an aspirational moment that has been achieved in America.
Yeah.
And it's like, and the work's not done, obviously. There's vast inequity and racism and patriarchy and all the rest to continue addressing. But I think it is an interesting moment to kind of celebrate the diversity.
Absolutely.
In that place for the first time. And that's wonderful. Julie Christensen, thank you for being here. You're such a sage, such a wise woman. I just loved listening to you soapbox rant at me for an hour. It was so good, truly.
I'm sorry.
No, you taught me things and I appreciate that. I love the definition of anger around, like, related to your expectations, TSA framework. I know that you've got books. I know you've got a website. I'll include links to that in the show notes. Is there any specific, like, a Facebook or an Instagram as well?
I am everywhere on social media. Okay. I am spread like not enough butter on too much bread on social media. Okay. So you'll find me on Instagram. You'll find me on LinkedIn. Okay. You'll find me on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube.
Oh yeah.
We're everywhere. Yeah. So.
Cool. All right. Well, I think that's it. I think we just crushed a podcast, and I just want to thank you again. And I'm stoked we got to connect. Thank you to Erin Sky Kelly for connecting us.
Yes.
She's a gem. She was also on the podcast a while ago. And yeah, hope to have you back one day when your next book is out, or anytime you feel like rambling for a while, I'd be happy to chat with you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jeremy. This has been a load of fun. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show, and, yeah, I wish you all the best in everything that you do moving forward. And I would be happy to come back. You let me know when you want me and I'll be there.
Thanks, Julie.
Okay, take care.
Well, I don't know about you, but I learned a whole lot from Julie Christensen about anger and expectations and navigating my emotions and my thoughts, my actions. It's so good. Do check her out online. She's on Instagram. She's on LinkedIn. You can buy her books. I'll include links to all that stuff in the show notes. I'll also include links to me, Jeremy. You can find me on Instagram at Long Distance Love Bombs. I send a weekly email out with some of my favorite books, movies that I love, things I'm thinking about. I share a little story. It's fun. And I also have a monthly membership called Team Never Giver Upper. If you're looking for a little community that lives in your pocket, I do a monthly workshop, monthly conversation with an expert, and lots of support, lots of good humans doing good human things, listening, connecting, encouraging. It's great. So I'll include a link to that as well. Thank you for being here. Thanks for the 5-star reviews. Thanks for leaving the written reviews. It all helps. It all helps to spread the word. And yeah, if there's someone that you know or love that could use a podcast about anger, I hope that you will send this to them now. Let's all try to be a little bit more healthy and productive, a little bit more loving and more kind. And I think Julie Christensen's methods are outstanding to help us do that. So thanks for contributing and for spreading the ripples far and wide.